Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Hamas has this morning said that its leader in Lebanon was killed in an Israeli strike in the south of the country. This comes as another Palestinian group, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, announced that three of its leaders were killed in an Israeli strike on central Beirut. In a moment, I'll speak to Fawaz Gurjez, who's Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics. But first, for the latest from Lebanon, I'm joined by William Christou, who is a journalist based in Beirut, writing for The Guardian. William, good morning to you.
Right.
William, will you tell me a little bit about where you are now and what's been happening there?
Sure. So I'm here in central Beirut at Kola intersection, as it's called, where last night Israel struck a residential building with two missiles, killing at least two members of the PFLP, the Popular Liberation Front for Palestine. And as you can hear, there's a lot of background noise. There's a lot of beeping. That's because this is one of the main intersections in Beirut. People come here every morning to get buses and taxis. And it's not a neighborhood that's known for its affiliation with Hezbollah. So the fact that it was struck has come as a surprise to everyone. There were sort of understood, unspoken rules that the strikes in Beirut, at least, would remain in the southern suburbs where support for Hezbollah is high. But yesterday's strike has changed that.
So this is the first attack within Beirut city limits since 2006. So I'm sure it's being seen as being very significant development in this, what is now considered a path to war.
Yeah, the rules of engagement are changing. Maybe they've been thrown out entirely. There's been a sentiment over the past 12 months that however bad things get, there are certain areas that you could go to in Lebanon that would be spared from fighting, whether they be the Christian parts of East Beirut or the non-Hezbollah parts of Beirut itself. Last night, those rules changed, and people are having to reconsider now where is safe and their contingency plans for if this war escalates, as it seems to be. Their contingency chances are changing.
Okay. William, I know in the last few minutes Hezbollah's deputy chief was due to give a speech and has been delivering that speech. And he has said that they're ready for a ground incursion. So this is this threat. And we've heard this from Israel over the last number of days, that they would go in on the ground in Lebanon. Hezbollah saying that they are ready. What are you hearing about that? Is Hezbollah ready? Will Israel follow that path?
Listen, I think this statement was the only statement the organization could make. They have to respond to the threats that Israel is making. Their ability to respond to Israel's aerial campaign over the last 2 weeks has been incredibly limited. They launched a couple, you know, one missile at Tel Aviv and it was shot down. They really are not able to fight Israel in an aerial war. But that being said, is the group capable of fighting off an Israeli incursion? The answer would have been very different 2 months ago. But now that the group has been left reeling from the loss of its communication systems during the pager attacks, they lost Hassan Nasrallah, the group's longtime leader, and almost the entire senior military leadership of the group. You know, the answer is unclear. The group is reeling from the loss, and they're still trying to regroup.
Mm-hmm. And there is this serious concern amongst international leaders that this broader war could break out now, William. And we'll talk to Fawaz about that in just a moment. What's the sense like there from the people you've been speaking to?
People are very afraid of what comes next. You know, there is a sense of anger from some that they don't want to see the bombing of Beirut and southern Lebanon and the immense death toll that's climbing go unanswered. At the same time, most people just want the fighting to stop. They're tired. They want to go home. You know, the displaced are sleeping in open areas in downtown Beirut now. So the situation is quite desperate. And so when Israel is talking about a ground incursion, this inspires a lot of fear from people who are thinking about their memories from 2006 when the country was besieged and fighting was quite intense. Mm-hmm. So I think people are quite scared that this might develop into an even bigger war than it has, and especially if it takes on a regional dimension.
And William, just before we let you go there in central Beirut, can Lebanon cope with a humanitarian crisis of this scale, given the level of movement and displacement of people we've seen in the last week?
The short answer is no. Lebanon has been going through an economic crisis for the last 5 years. The state is bankrupt. Its institutions have been hollowed out. At the same time, the state, in support with many NGOs and the UN, have been trying to prep themselves for this exact scenario. But, you know, it seems so far the suddenness and the intensity of the assault and the accompanying displacement has overwhelmed authorities. I mentioned earlier that there are displaced people all over the city, some sleeping rough in parks, and that's true. And when I talked to them, many have said they have not received any aid. No one has come to give them anything. They don't know where to go. They don't know which shelters to go to. Some I spoke to said the shelters they went to were full. So already it looks as if state capacity is overwhelmed. So if there's a further escalation, I can only imagine it'll get worse.
William, thank you very much for taking our call there. William Christou is in central Beirut. And as I said, we have Fawaz Gurjez, who's Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics, listening to all of that. And Fawaz, William is painting a picture of a country in deep distress, in a state of anxiety and fear. And Israel senses its opportunity. That's where things stand this morning.
Yes, I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu, you know, celebrated the fact at the United Nations last week that he is winning. We are winning. We are winning in Gaza. We are winning in Lebanon. We are winning against Iran. There is no place that our reach cannot really win. I think what's happening now, Israel has declared all-out war, not only against Hezbollah in Lebanon, but against what it sees as the axis of resistance, that really its primary target, its strategic target, is Iran. And the prime minister just on yesterday or Saturday, he said he released a statement which was very revealing. He said, what we have now is a turning historical point. We want to create a new balance of power, a new security structure in the region, supposedly led by Israel and the United States and its pro-Western Arab allies. My fear that this is not just about a few days and a few weeks and a few months. This is all out war. And just final point on your question. It's very easy to celebrate some tactical wins at the beginning of the war. Israel has just started this war. Israel will never be able to end this war on its own terms, as the United States discovered, belatedly discovered in Afghanistan and in Iraq. This will be remembered as Benjamin Netanyahu's mission accomplished moment. So the war from Hezbollah's point of view has not really started yet because they are off balance, they are rattled, and they're trying to put their house in order and try to really put their communications in order, because their communications have been infiltrated and their command and control is in great chaos. Mm-hmm. So this is where we are at this particular point.
And their leader, of course, is gone too, killed by Israel. And we have that speech from the Hezbollah deputy chief saying, be reassured, victory is our ally. We need a bit of patience. That's revealing too, isn't it? I mean, they really have been knocked off balance. Do you think that their capacity to respond is significantly compromised?
Well, look, I think Hezbollah has suffered some very severe blows, operational blows, psychological blows, as you said. The top leadership chain has been killed. Israel, obviously, has infiltrated Israel with the support of the United States fully, and British intelligence services, I would take it. Has infiltrated the command and control. They really know the whereabouts of their top leaders, of their operational commanders. And they have been systematically killing the military and the political leadership. Now they've turned their attention to the political leadership. Just over the weekend, they killed a top political leader. And I take it that every day now you're going to wake up on basically new assassinated leaders, not just of Hezbollah, But even Hezbollah's allies, the Palestinians, and even leftist movement in Lebanon and other, resistance movement in Lebanon. So the reality is Hezbollah needs a lot of time. Hezbollah is off balance. The question is, they have to do it where they are under fire, because Israel has complete control of the skies. I mean, look, you and I were talking about Israel and Hezbollah. It's really unfair. It's a false comparison. Israel has one of the most powerful armies in the Middle East, probably in the world, the fifth in the world, funded and supported and armed by the United States. Israel is using F-35 fighters, American new fighters, to target civilian and residential building. It has 100 nuclear devices. Hezbollah is a non-state actor. It's, of course, is very strong, but you cannot compare the two. So, but at the end of the day, again, to your listeners, we're talking about asymmetrical warfare. Again, if history is a guide, look what happened to Israel's invasion of Lebanon and occupation between 1980 and 2000. Israel was forced to leave Lebanon in 2000 as a result of guerrilla warfare by Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. And look what the United States, what happened to the United States in Afghanistan and Iraq. So I think you're going to see Hezbollah in the next few days, next few weeks, next few months, using asymmetrical warfare in order to bleed the Israeli army. And guess what? The overarching strategic goal of Benjamin Netanyahu is to return his displaced 60,000 roughly displaced people to the north, to Lebanese-Israeli borders. This goal will never be achieved, regardless of whether he invades Lebanon or not. So this is a long war. Of course, Hezbollah and Lebanon will be destroyed, already Israel. I mean, look, this is the greatest displacement crisis in Lebanon's history. You have 1 million people on the march in almost a week. So you can imagine the damage Israel can do, has done. So this is really, the okay. Lebanese are not just shocked, they are traumatized.
Okay, and can I ask you, do you believe that if Israel do decide to launch a ground invasion into Lebanon, that that would suit Hezbollah, that they will be far better able to cope with that than what they're dealing with at the moment, which is the air attacks, almost impossible to mitigate against, but really they would have supremacy on the ground?
That's what I said, asymmetrical warfare. Guerrilla groups and resistance movement, committed resistance movement, cannot really fight an aerial bombardment by Israel. So their only hope, and they have made it very clear, Nasrallah said, we are praying that Israel will launch its ground attack. But what Israel now is doing is trying to soften the defenses of Hezbollah, to destroy as much capabilities as possible and then really launch a ground attack. It's already in process, according to multiple sources in Israel. But then once Israel launches its ground attack, the reality is no one really can predict what will happen in the next few months and next few years. This is Hezbollah's strategic opportunity to really get Israel bogged down in Lebanon's killing field, as it did between 1982 and 2006.
Mm-hmm. It's unlikely that the Americans will make any moves towards cutting military ties with Israel, given where they are in the electoral cycle. You know, you can imagine if Joe Biden made that announcement, that Donald Trump would say, well, there are the Democrats disarming our allies, and I will stand with Israel. I will take the fight to Iran and to its proxies.
Well, look, Joe Biden does not really need Donald Trump. Joe Biden has fully supported Israel's war aims in Gaza and in Lebanon. Yesterday, just over the weekend, the president and Harris said the assassination of Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah was basically justice was done. They did not really mention a single word about the scores of civilians basically killed in Israeli attacks and using 2,000, bombs, American bombs, to really target the heart of Beirut. So the reality is Israel could not do what it has done in the past 10 months, in the past 57 years, its occupation of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, without really American unwavering support, and this support will not basically be declined. And just final point on this, your question, the U.S. now has deployed one of the biggest naval and military armada in the region, quote unquote, to protect and support Israel, but also to intervene if Iran basically decides to retaliate for the attacks against Hezbollah and its own leaders, both in Lebanon and in Iran.
All right, Fawaz, thank you very much for your time. Fawaz Gurjay is there, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics. Coming up next on the programme, should gym goers get a tax break to encourage them to exercise? We'll debate after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.